Listen to what I'm saying. Derek Carr has had to win 3 games to be here.
Okay.
In the final drives of games. I'm talking about final drives when they have to have points. So what I'm saying, I'm not saying Joe Burrow can't do it. Derek Carr feels comfortable in this now.
If you, like Derek Carr, are comfortable with anarchy, this weekend is for you. Because the Raiders are just one of 14 NFL teams now hanging on for dear life as we enter maybe the most high-stakes and high-stress part of the entire American sports calendar. And this specific wildcard weekend is unlike any other we've seen before. So today, Bill Barnwell makes the very complicated very simple. And he tells us exactly what we need to know. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, January 14th. This is ESPN Daily.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So that Chargers-Raiders Week 18 game, Bill, being followed immediately by all these coaches getting fired, Joe Judge sneaking under the wire, getting crushed by the wire, also happening, then that going right into wildcard weekend, man, which is, as always, this all-you-can-eat, like, this year uniquely anything-can-happen buffet of playoff football. It feels like a challenge to your personal sanity. So how are you feeling right now?
I feel overstimulated, Pablo. I mean, I have to admit, I'm not a big napper, but the Joe Judge news came when I was taking a rare nap and I had to wake up and see the news and then try to figure out whether I was still dreaming or actually was living in the world where the Giants had made an aggressive, intelligent decision about their overmatched head coach. I feel like it's all just blending into a surreal mix of fantasy and reality at this point.
I gotta say, Bill, if your lucid dreams did in fact involve making better organizational decisions for the Giants, that would all feel very on-brand.
I feel like that's the best chance I have of actually impacting the Giants organization, unfortunately.
So let's start this weekend with the very beginning, because we get the Raiders again, mm-hmm. Bill. They have this giant emotional peak, and now they travel to Cincinnati at 4:30 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, Saturday, where the wide-open AFC begins its reckoning. And I know that there's a lot going on here, but I want to start with just like an under-the-radar matchup maybe that you specifically are going to be keeping an eye on here in Cincy. What are you watching?
Okay, I mean, I think it's tough to say this is under the radar necessarily, but I feel like the guy who is not maybe the offensive player who comes to mind, but a guy who on the defensive side of the ball could dictate the game for the Raiders is Max Crosby, who, number one, if you don't know Max Crosby, his name is M-A-X-X. It is an incredible football name. Very, very like 80s, yes. Like bad guy in a sports movie name.
Yes, Vin Diesel-esque, or at least one X short of a Vin Diesel. Yeah, yeah.
Or one N more than a Vin Diesel. I think Max Crosby is such a key player for this game, because if you watch that Chargers game and you were not overwhelmed by the chaos at the very end of the contest, you saw Max Crosby basically winning that game for the Raiders. He was incredible. Yeah. He harassed Justin Herbert all game. He had 2 sacks, 3 tackles for a loss, 4 quarterback knockdowns, and 3 pass deflections all over the place in that game. He's one of the most underrated players in football, Pablo. And you go back to the first time these two teams played, he had the single best pass rush win rate, which is an ESPN stat that measures how well you're getting at the quarterback. The single best pass rush win rate we've seen from a single defender on the edge this entire season. He was incredible. And it's a bad matchup for the Bengals because they're starting right tackle Riley Reiff is injured. They're going to be starting backup Isaiah Prince, who is untested at this level, against a guy who might be one of the best pass rushers in all of football.
So if there is that storyline running through this, how is this week, Bill, going to be different from that game you just alluded to? Week 11 in Las Vegas, the Bengals stomping on the Raiders 32-13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was a game where it just the Raiders shot themselves in the foot over and over and over again. The Bengals only committed one penalty right at the end of the game. The Raiders, not so much. Seven penalties for 77 yards, including two unnecessary roughness penalties after stops on third downs. So drives would have ended. Instead, those drives continued and turned into points. Yannick Ngakoue flagged for a roughing the passer penalty on Joe Burrow as he was throwing the ball away. Not the best time to commit roughing the passer. An offsides call wiped away a sack that would have ended a drive for the Bengals. Just terrible play in terms of discipline from the Las Vegas Raiders. And on top of all that, Pablo, the Raiders didn't convert a single third down in that game until there were 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Hunter Renfrow, like his birthright is to convert a third down every quarter. Something is wrong. Hunter Renfrow's not running like a sextuple move route to convert third downs. And it's just like nobody can win games this way. If you're not converting on third down, if you're taking penalties unnecessarily on third down to get the other team on the field, you're not going to have any chance of winning the game. That stuff's not going to happen again. The Raiders are not going to be as undisciplined. They're probably going to have better luck converting on third down. But the Bengals did not need Joe Burrow in that first game.
Well, Bill, I was going to ask you, where does the Joe Burrow aspect of this equation enter in? Because we have seen that guy recently being the peak version of himself.
Absolutely. But first time these two teams played, Pablo, he didn't really factor in. He had 148 passing yards. He was kind of an afterthought. It was Joe Mixon and the Raiders screwing things up for themselves. So, I mean, we know the Bengals have a lot of different paths to winning this football game, whether it's the Raiders making the mistakes for them or Joe Burrow playing at this MVP level we've seen over the past couple weeks. But Joe Burrow quietly dealing with a knee injury, that could factor into this game.
Right. That knee injury that he suffered on that very last drive of that game, which solidified his mythology as, again, yeah, a guy who could also smoke victorious celebratory cigars as a professional. But okay, so I want to move on here to the second Saturday game. This is now going to be 8:15 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, and the Patriots are on to Orchard Park, Bill, where it's looking, I'm looking at our latest meteorological update. It's looking like a high of 10 degrees on Saturday, a low of 1. And of course, as anyone who has ever mainlined the Weather Channel knows, that's not the real feel, right? The people who are going to the game are saying it's going to be, you know, closer to 0 degrees at kickoff and feel like negative 10. And we already have like the grand weather machismo pulsing out of Buffalo, right? We have Steve Tasker, the Bills legend, taunting, "Get ready. It might be chilly."
"Be ready. It might be chilly."
In that very movie trailer voice. And we have Bills defensive tackle Harrison Phillips being a little less subtle, saying, quote, "Who gives a shit if it's cold? Let's just play football."
I mean, look, the weather's completely out of our control. And who gives a shit if it's cold? Let's just play football. You know what I mean? Like, if it's 4 degrees, if it's 9 degrees, if it's 20 degrees, it doesn't matter. Let's just play the game.
And we know that weather was this huge factor in round one of Patriots Bills. That was the wind game, as I have very unimaginatively decided to call it. But what do you think this is going to feel like this time around?
Well, I mean, Pablo, this is going to sound very privileged because in my cozy apartment, I will not let the temperature fall below 70 degrees. But I don't think the weather is going to matter all that much. Yes, if you are tailgating for this game, you need to protect yourself. Please be careful. If you're playing in this game, please stay near the heated bench that I'm assuming the Patriots will bring to Buffalo. But this is a question, Pablo, where I defer to the people who care about this stuff the most, and that is the gamblers of the
a
world.
Very good strategy, yeah.
Yes, every gambler I've ever spoken to about this, Pablo, has always said the same thing, and it's that snow and rain matters a tiny bit, depends on how much it is. If it's a snowstorm, it's a problem. If it's a little bit of snow, doesn't really matter. Wind, as we saw in the first game between these two teams, matters a lot. It's difficult to throw the ball. If there's heavy wind gusts, it's going to take the kicking game out of the equation. That matters quite a bit. But temperature does not really matter all that much. And look at the total for this game, Pablo, in Vegas. It's currently at 44 points. It's exactly the same as the total we saw the second time these two teams played, when it was 38 degrees outside. So a more reasonable temperature for the winter in the Northeast. Now, things can change between the time we record this and Saturday night. If you remember back a few years ago, there was that Vikings-Seahawks playoff game in 2015 when the real feel was minus 25.
Oh, Lord.
Ticketmaster had to tell people before the game to print out their tickets because it would be too cold for their cell phones with their mobile tickets to work at the stadium. That is a difference maker. At right around 0 degrees, it sounds terrible. I would not want to be outside in it. I don't think it's actually going to impact this game all that much.
But hold on, because speaking of curious cell phone usages, I do want to ask you about this fact that you tweeted recently about the 21 Bills versus the 99 Rams, who are apparently, per your accounting, the only teams to win 11 games while going winless in the games decided by 7 points or less from the years 1989 to 2021. So what does this really mean here, Bill? Does it mean that the Bills are, you know, quietly Super Bowl favorites, or the opposite, that they might get upset by these Patriots?
Judging by the replies to that tweet, Pablo, it appears that it means both those things, and you can get angry at either of the outcomes. I think it's more the former. I think it tells us the Bills are a better team than maybe we're giving them credit for. I mean, yes, their record did drop last year, 13-3, this year, 11-6, but get to those more granular measures of performance. Look at things like drive-by-drive or play-by-play. They seem to suggest the Bills are a better team this year than the one we saw a year ago, especially, of course, on the defensive side of the football. In 2020, the Bills were outscoring their opponents by about 8 points per game. Very good. No questions there. 2021, they're outscoring their opponents by more than 11 points per contest. They're better by DVOA. They're better by ESPN's Football Power Index. Pretty much any measure we have that's not wins and losses, the Bills are better this year than they were a year ago. And the difference, Pablo, that I alluded to in that tweet, is that in 2020, the Bills were 5-1 in those one-score games. This year, 0-5. The last team to do that, like I mentioned, the only team to do that over the past 30 years or so, are the greatest show on turf Rams, who went on to win the Super Bowl. I don't think the Bills are realistically a different team, as an example, because Josh Allen slipped on the 1 yard line and did not convert a 4th-and-1 against Tennessee, even though that ended up being the difference between a win and a loss for Buffalo. Most measures I found have said the Bills are on a basis independent of seed or independent of the situation they're in right now, the playoff path they have to take, they look like the best team heading into the AFC playoffs. And I think even if you throw the numbers out, leave them aside, I don't think there's any team in the NFL, or at least on the AFC side of the bracket, who have shown the ceiling we've seen on offense and defense from the Bills this season. And that includes the Patriots, who we know they can be incredible on defense. But we saw them the last time these two teams played. They couldn't keep up. Mac Jones really struggled having to throw the ball down multiple scores. And I think unless the Patriots can follow that script from the first game, get out to an early lead, run the ball effectively, force the Bills to have to catch up, I think the Bills win the rubber match here.
Wow. Just for the record here, I feel like Bills fans are mad at you now, because you've now actually said, guys, you should feel good about yourselves heading into this. And that feels like already the immediate sign that you should panic if you're a Buffalo fan.
That's just the national media not understanding local fan bases and actually predicting them to be good. Can't do that.
All right, Bill. So we make it here to the last game of the AFC bracket, and it takes place on Sunday night. It's 8:15 p.m. Eastern. We're watching the Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Kansas City. And this one, Bill, we start with the words of Ben Roethlisberger, who is very much still playing football, shockingly. But he himself said on Wednesday, quote, "We don't have a chance, so let's go in and have fun."
Yeah, I mean, we're probably 20-point underdogs, and we're going to the number one team that's, I know they're not the number one seed, but they're the number one team that's won the AFC the last 2 years, arguably the best team in football. We don't have a chance, so let's just go in and play and have fun.
Which is something that I want you to help me decipher. What is he trying to do here?
Given how the first game went between these two teams, Pablo, I can understand why Roethlisberger would be going through the various stages of grief as quickly as possible for his, not only his season, but also his soon-to-be-ended career. The Steelers lost the first game between these two teams, 36-10. Roethlisberger was pulled for his own safety in the second half for Mason Rudolph. But I'm strangely going to be a tiny bit more optimistic than Ben Roethlisberger appears to be about his own team and his own career in this situation? Because I feel like that game was a really unlucky outcome for the Steelers. No, I don't think they should have won that game by any means. They lost by 26 points. That's, they deserve to lose. Let's put that up.
What happened though then?
What happened was fumbles, essentially. The evidence tells us, Pablo, whether it's the numbers, whether it's looking back at history, whether it's just watching a football bounce around and these incredible athletes desperately try to pick it up with limited success. We know that fumble recovery rates are random from game to game, from drive to drive, from year to year. You can't count on recovering a particularly high or low percentage of the fumbles in an NFL game. There are five fumbles in that game. We'd expect each team to get about 2.5. Instead, the Chiefs got 5 of those fumbles. The Steelers got 0. In a game where you're a huge underdog like the Steelers are against the Chiefs, you have to have that luck go your way for you to win that game. The game we saw a couple weeks ago, that was an example of what happens when all the bounces go the Chiefs' way. The Steelers can't afford to win a game where the Chiefs not only a better team than them, but also getting lucky in the process. So you got to figure that's not going to happen again. No reason to think the Steelers are going to fail to recover every fumble in that contest. And I think we're sort of making some allusions between the Steelers-Chiefs game and the Bengals-Raiders game. I think there's another application here as well, and I think it's the fact that a pass rusher might be the difference maker. Max Crosby may be flying underneath the radar a bit. You can't say that about TJ Watt, the presumptive defensive player of the year. And I think the guy who could flip this game for the Steelers. Like Crosby, TJ Watt lines up on the left side of the defense across from right tackle. Like the Bengals, the Chiefs are down to a backup tackle, not just their second stringer, but their third stringer, Pablo, and Andrew Wiley, who played right tackle for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, where we saw a great defensive line pick the Chiefs apart and win.
Phil, I love the idea of, like, you played for this team in the Super Bowl being something that's actually a grand indictment. If you remember that Super Bowl,
it takes about 2 seconds to think, oh no, I don't want a repeat of that time where I did the greatest thing I'll ever do by playing in a Super Bowl. I think that tells you how bad it went for the Chiefs in that game. I mean, I think if we're talking about a crazy Steelers upset Monday morning, it's almost impossible for me to imagine that happening without TJ Watt playing one of the best games of his entire career.
So if you're going to be watching TJ Watt in particular in this one on the defensive end, I want to ask you about, like, you know, how the Chiefs are shaping up on offense, because I know the Chiefs offense is the Chiefs offense, you know, that's tautological, but also accurate, I feel like, you know, but if they do win this one, as Big Ben predicts, and they get onto the divisional round, what is the deal with Tyreek Hill going to be like? What's it like right now, actually? Because I know he has this heel injury, but he also has not had a play, apparently, over 50 yards since week one. So what's going on here?
I do like that you're explaining that Big Ben predicts the Chiefs will win, because this leads to a possible Tom Brady paradox, where Tom Brady says he predicts the other team to win and then says nobody believed in us when they upset. It's very troubling to us as content producers that might be a possibility. With Tyreek Hill, I think it's a combination of things. I mean, first and foremost, I feel like it's almost ad nauseum at this point, bringing up the words too high in relation to the Chiefs offense. But
yeah, the word cloud of NFL discourse, Bill, has too and high in like 150 point font.
It's all we had. It's all we had during the 2021 season. It was that and COVID to work with. I mean, during the regular season, that's what happened, though. The Chiefs saw a ton of two deep coverages, two deep safeties, take away those big plays. Other teams were kind of willing to let them do anything else they wanted on offense. The Chiefs had, I think, the highest third down conversion rate in league history, or close to it, based on how much open space they had to work with underneath. But teams were willing to do that to take away those big plays from Tyreek Hill. And then I think on top of that, it's clear Hill's not 100%. I mean, go back to week 16. He didn't miss the game, but Tyreek Hill was placed on the COVID list, was questionable to play, came back, played 29 snaps below his normal average, and said he was quote-unquote exhausted after that game. Then he suffers a heel injury in warmups before the game in week 18 and caught one pass for 2 yards on 14 snaps. And yes, the NFL is a strange game. Tyreek will come back this weekend, look like his old self, have 200 yards. That's not out of the realm of possibility. But if the Chiefs do win this game pretty big, I wouldn't be shocked if they took Hill out in the second half to try and rest him for the games to come. And Hill, of course, could have been resting this week outright if the Chiefs had a bye, but they lost to the Bengals in week 17, cost themselves the number one seed in the process, and are forcing Hill at less than 100% to play this week against the Steelers.
Right. No, it does sound like a little breather would be ideal for Tyreek Hill at this point. And incidentally, also for us. So for us after the break, Bill, when we return, I want you to tell me what I need to know about the whole other side of this playoff bracket over in the NFC.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, Bill, we're in the NFC now. It is Sunday somehow. It is 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Philadelphia is headed to Tampa. And this one, beyond the whole like Brady versus Philly special kind of stuff, their own history there, there is a matchup here that is intriguing to me in a real way because Tampa Bay beat the Eagles 28-22. But in this game, you're going to get this Bucs team without Chris Godwin, without Antonio Brown, infamously. They're missing some really important weapons here. Now, they do get Leonard Fournette back for this game. He had 2 touchdowns in that first game. But I'm just curious how these Bucs right now are different to you compared to the team that went on the Super Bowl run last season. Like, is the loss of those receivers going to be a huge difference maker here?
First and foremost, Pablo, I would pay $1,000 US to the Eagles if they signed Antonio Brown for this game. just throwing that out there.
Bill, if we could get Antonio Brown on this game, put Madonna on the sideline, whatever that real life meme they just recreated. Yeah, put Kanye there. Yes, I want all of that.
As for the Bucks, I mean, I think this is definitely a different team. Last year, heading through the postseason, they were getting healthier, it felt like, as the postseason went on. I mean, Brock Gronkowski was not really a factor for them during the regular season a year ago and then played a big role during the playoffs. And it kind of feels like we're heading in the opposite direction now. You mentioned those guys who are out. Godwin, of course, tore an ACL. Antonio Brown left the Bucs to become a cameo star. Certainly unavailabilities in that passing game. But then I think it's even the guys who are left are banged up. Leonard Fournette is just coming off of IR. Mike Evans was banged up heading into the end of the regular season. Rob Gronkowski, we know he's played his entire career as a pro through a debilitating back ailment.
Right.
I mean, I think that if everyone sticks around, the Bucs are going to be fine because they still have the best offensive line in football. That line is healthy heading into the postseason. Evans and Gronkowski are plenty for Tom Brady to throw to, but their margin for error now is basically nil. If they lose Evans, if they lose Gronkowski, if they lose Fournette, suddenly this offense is really going to be compromised.
Well, especially because the Philadelphia Eagles are apparently a playoff team. Like, I didn't realize this, Bill, that, like, these Eagles would be in this in a plausible, real way. I mean, the Eagles, like, the matchup for them here in terms of, like, what's going to happen on the ground, I know they love to run the ball, but the Bucs famously have one of the best rush defenses in the entire league, right? So Jalen Hurts, I know he's exceeded expectations, but can he do enough here with his arm, with his legs, to actually make this a game?
I am skeptical. I would love to tell you that that is the case. I like the Eagles. I picked them to make the playoffs before the season began.
Ooh.
I just don't like this matchup for them. And I think about the Saints game that happened a few weeks ago where it was Taysom Hill. I think kind of the closest thing to this Eagles offense is what the Saints have in New Orleans. And the Bucs shut them down. They ran for 61 yards on 31 carries. They scored just 9 points all game. Now, if you're an Eagles fan, the obvious retort there is, well, the Saints still won, and they did. They shut the Buccaneers out and won 9-0. That is a formula the Eagles could try and emulate. Pablo, I don't... How can I put this nicely? I'm a little skeptical of the Eagles' defense being as good as maybe their record suggests, because I look at the quarterbacks they've played this year, and I'm going to give you a list.
Okay.
And you tell me where Tom Brady fits in. I have, on the high end, Matt Ryan and Teddy Bridgewater. That's the peak.
That's from the high end. Okay.
From there it goes Sam Darnold, Jake Fromm, Garrett Gilbert, Jared Goff, Taylor Heineke, Trevor Siemian, and Zach Wilson. I mean, I don't want to order them in any particular way, but if Tom Brady and those quarterbacks were all at a party, Tom Brady would not want to talk to any of them. That's an insult to Matt Ryan.
Tom Brady's in a room inside the room that those guys can't enter.
Exactly. And that's insulting to Matt Ryan, and I'm sorry to the Ryan family. But the Eagles have not beat a great quarterback or a great passing game at any point during this season. So if they can combine both those things, if they can run the ball effectively and they can suddenly shut down a great quarterback, they can win. That's a lot to ask, especially with Jalen Hurts struggling with his own ankle injury heading into this contest.
So that would then mean that the game with the most promising underdog, maybe, Bill, is the 49ers at the Cowboys. And let's begin with some history here, because I know we deal with an audience in which there are some young people, allegedly, and this has become a thing, because the last time these two teams met in this historical rivalry in the playoffs was in 1994 in the NFC Championship, and that was the most star-studded game in NFL history, apparently. I'm looking at the numbers here now. 21 Pro Bowlers, 19 All-Pros, 10 future Hall of Famers, the all-time leading receivers there, Jerry Rice.
Young goes back to throw, going deep. For Jerry Rice, covered by Brown, touchdown.
The all-time leading rushers there, Emmitt Smith.
Cowboys going a quick count. Emmitt Smith is going to get in the end zone.
I mean, there's the catch. There are three straight NFC Championship games in the 90s. There's T.O. on the star.
Here we go.
He's going to have a big fight. There goes Diggs. Puts it down. And George Team levels it.
Here it goes.
And Owens is waved to the bench. And he stands in the middle of the star and holds the ball out. There are flags everywhere.
Like, it's overflowing with drama. But Kyle Shanahan, I think, accurately pointed out that, like, most of his players are too young to remember this. Mm-hmm. So what does this matchup mean as you see it in the NFL in 2022?
It means me pondering the passing of time, considering. I mean, I remember when I was a child, and I am 37 now. I remember that this was the go-to matchup in Madden. If you went to your friend's house and you were going to play Madden, it was, okay, I am picking between the Cowboys and the 49ers. There's no other alternative here. And that's no longer the case. I mean, yes, if you are a person who is playing in the NFL now or a younger listener to this show, I recognize that you would not realize that the Madden from 1995 even resembled football on the screen, let alone a high-end video game at the time. But I promised you, the likeness of a very pixelated Emmitt Smith or Steve Young was the highest of high culture to us as 10-year-olds.
It was. Our Uncanny Valley was very pixelated at the time. Yeah, it was still very, very surreal. But okay, so now we're in the present tense, Bill. Yes. And in 2022, we have the Cowboys atop the NFC East in a landslide, right? Yeah. We know this. We know that they've been, you know, on the periphery, it would seem, of that Super Bowl contender conversation pretty much all year. But now they get Micah Parsons, they get Tyron Smith back from the COVID list. Mm-hmm. What do the Cowboys need to do to prevent the 49ers from reminding everybody that, you know, they used to be a championship team too?
Yeah, I think there's a really simple formula for them, and it's what they do best over the course of this season. That's forced takeaways. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo has been a quarterback in years past who, even before his thumb injury, is prone to giving the football away. And that has been a mess for the 49ers. They're 8-1 this year when they either don't turn the ball over or only turn the ball over one time all game. But if you get two or more turnovers from Kyle Shanahan's team, they're 2-6. Mm. And for the Cowboys, this is a team where they've had 12 games this year where they've forced at least two takeaways. That's the most we've seen by any team over the past decade. They are the number one team in football when it comes to forcing takeaways from the opposing offense. So there's a really simple formula there. If they can get maybe an early lead, force the Niners to become one-dimensional, force Jimmy Garoppolo to throw with that thumb injury, I think they have a great shot of getting the takeaways they need to sort of solidify that formula and avoid the possibility of an upset by these 49ers.
So if that's how to best minimize the threat of the Niners, mm-hmm. and I know Trent Williams, their tackle, Jaquaski Tartt, their safety, they're going to be back for this one in San Francisco. They're getting healthy, seemingly, at a very convenient time. So tell me now what the scariest thing about the Niners would be. What's the case for them?
Yeah, Pablo, I think you have to go back to their formula from that 2019 playoff run when a lot of this core was still there and the Niners ran through the NFC, including running through the Packers almost literally to make it to the Super Bowl. I think as good as you are, as good as your team is, you're not really built to kind of compete with the Niners, given some of the things they can do. They can really beat you up at the line of scrimmage. Nick Bosa has had an excellent season, not a defensive player of the year caliber season, but kind of right in that second tier below the TJ Watts of the world. And that defensive line, maybe not as good as it was during that 2019 playoff run, but Chris Kocurek, the defensive line coach, is excellent. They have so many guys who can beat you one-on-one if you're focusing on Bosa. And then we know, Pablo, they're capable of running the football still at an extremely high level. And that's something that really in the NFL in 2022, a lot of teams aren't built to stop these days. Like, they're built to stop the pass. They're built to have 5-6 defensive backs on the field. They're not built to stop you if you can run the ball a lot in this game. And so I think I mentioned the Cowboys getting an early lead. I think it's even more important for the Niners here. Get an early lead, avoid takeaways, take the possibility of Garoppolo having to throw 45 or 50 times off the table. And I think you're a pain to beat. I mean, the Cowboys come into this game. They are second in the NFL against the pass by Football Outsiders DVOA efficiency statistic. They're 16th against the run. They're much different against the run than they are against the pass. So protect the football, chew up clock, shorten the game. I think they have a shot at upsetting the Cowboys.
Phil, I love the fact that this game could hypothetically both educate our young fans here about the former glory of the Niners and also, like, you know, what it's like to play football back when I was a kid.
Madden didn't really know how to throw the football. It was mostly just you had to run the football and get lucky. Like, you could, if you hit like a butting combination at the right time, you could throw the football, but it was pretty much just sheer chaos out there.
Well, so the other aspect of this that feeds into this conversation is the fact that it's the Nickelodeon game. So the youth of America are actually going to be a key part of the audience demographic here. And who could forget Mitch Trubisky being the reigning first ever Nickelodeon Valuable Player MVP award winner. Who's going to do that this game?
It'll be emotional, I think, to see the handover ceremony as Mitch Trubisky hands over the crown of slime to the winner of this game. I think there's two candidates, and I think I would feel pretty confident it's going to be one of these two guys, depending on how this game goes. I think if it's a big blowout for the Cowboys, I think it'll be Zeke Elliott. I mean, he has an easy celebration, the Feed Me celebration that kids love. Any kid can do that.
Yep.
He's a well-known star, and he's likely to finish with like a line that's more impressive than it actually is in reality, like 17 carries for 40 yards and 2 touchdowns. So I think he's the perfect MVP option, a bit of an ironic vote and a bit of a kid vote.
And he's perfect because which kid can't relate to a guy who is housing cereal while also having his midriff exposed?
All children want to jump into the Salvation Army bill. So no reason for them to not already think Ezekiel Elliott is a favorite. But then if the game script goes differently, if it's a close game, if the Niners win an upset, I think Jimmy G has to be the favorite here. I mean, we know, Pablo, you have a young child.
I do.
If you watch children's programming, you know the stars all have symmetrical faces. So if Jimmy G wins MVP, he probably gets cut by the Niners this offseason. Trey Lance takes over. maybe Jimmy G quits football and becomes the new Blippi. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility here.
It does feel like Jimmy Garoppolo's destiny, now that I realize this, is to be a children's YouTuber.
It's perfect.
Yes. Blippi, by the way, also making like 8 figures a year. We've all made terrible life decisions, Bill. We should all be quarterbacks or YouTube stars. Okay. So we get here to the end of the weekend. We have made it. It is 8:15 p.m. Eastern on Monday. And the Cardinals and the Rams are kicking off. And this is where we enter the other end of the motivational spectrum. Because what Cliff Kingsbury has done, the coach of the Cardinals, of course, is the exact opposite of the Roethlisberger school of motivational nihilism. Bill, he's saying to Kyler Murray in public, he's going to play the best game of his career on Monday night in his first ever playoff appearance. So what's happening there philosophically and actually in terms of on the field stuff?
Oh boy. I mean, I would say 15 years of aging between these two quarterbacks. I think a lot of people either were more hopeful than they were at 24 than they are at 39, or I would say a lot of people are more hopeful about 24-year-olds than they are about 39-year-olds. I think Ben Roethlisberger is at the very least a realist and recognizes that, as someone who has basically been on a month-long retirement tour where he expected to not be in the postseason, only to wake up and suddenly realize he's actually in the playoffs now, that his chances are pretty slim. And the opposite is true for the Cardinals. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury was the presumptive coach of the year. He was angling for a raise to not go to Oklahoma a few weeks ago. I mean, this was a Cardinals team that was supposed to be proving that they're not the same old Cardinals. And yet, here we are, Pablo. And yes, they're in the postseason, but they sure look and feel and act like the same old Cardinals. We've seen them collapse in the second half because of a declining offense. Over the last 5 games, they've gone 1-4, Pablo. They are 17th in the NFL in the offensive expected points per snap metric. That's worse. Now, I understand if you don't know what expected points per snap are, that's fine. But just to contextualize it, they're worse than the Texans and the Lions on offense by that measure. That's all you need to know. Any measure, could be any number, fake, real, doesn't matter. If you're worse than Texans and Lions, you're doing something wrong on the offensive side of the football. I feel like at this point, given that DeAndre Hopkins is out for this game with a torn MCL, James Conner is a game-time decision. I mean, I think this comes down to Kyler Murray being magical. It comes down to him making inch-perfect throws against this Rams secondary, avoiding Aaron Donald, chasing him down play after play. So for Cliff Kingsbury, I think he has to treat Kyler Murray as if he's going to play the best game of his career, because the Cardinals have no choice. They're not going to win unless that happens.
So what I'm not realizing is that what Cliff Kingsbury is really doing is incepting Kyler Murray. He is trying to craft his own lucid dream and implant that into Kyler Murray's consciousness.
Yes, and like Inception, Cliff Kingsbury might have peaked about 8 or 9 years ago, Pablo. So we're hoping that we get a new, perhaps improved version of this air raid offense from Kingsbury against the Rams on Monday.
Yes, great 8 or 9 years ago, and also leaning a lot on alleged complexity to cover up many really serious plot holes.
Yes, that's fair.
Bill Barnwell, thank you for joining us, and dream well.
I am the allegedly complex member of this podcast, Papa. Thank you.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Andre Soto, Christian Gardner, Emma Erdbrink, Garrett Lang, and Jackson Ugelo. I'll talk to you Monday.